Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Eric, I feel like we're related. Like, are you
we
my long-lost brother?
Sister.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? It is me, Eric Williams, and this week we have Jess Rothschild on the podcast. You listen to her pod called Hot Takes and Deep Dives, and you should be listening to the brand new series called Finding Fire Island, which features icons like Joel Kim Booster, Margaret Cho, Brian Moylan, and more. And I gotta say, it's such a great chat with Jess, not only to talk about the queer oases that are Fire Island and P-Town, but the good news is I'm going to one of those queer oases on the West Coast this very week. You see, I'm in a funk, y'all. Post-Pride funk. Anyone else? Just such a letdown from all the excitement, travel, busyness. My therapist says I just need to take a break and enjoy, and that's what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to one of those gay nudie beaches in a few days, and you will be hearing stories next week, unless it's a disaster. I mean, I'll still tell you about it, but I might lie. I want to say that for this week's episode, we talk about the Fire Island mistake that I made during my only time going, and also how Jess became friends with your biggest crush from the Real World New Orleans television show. If you have not yet left a 5-star review for this podcast, I'm realizing the amount of people that listen and the amount of reviews we have, the math ain't mathin'. So do me a favor right now, click the 5 stars and write a cute review if you have not yet. And I really mean that. It's a big way for people to listen to the podcast if they see that other people like it. So do me that favor. And also, if you don't support the podcast on Patreon, consider it, girly. It is $5 a month for ad-free eps, and I'll be posting the recent Gay Ass Live Show videos there. Enjoy this episode, take care of yourself, and stay gay. Jess Rothschild on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. You listen to her hot takes and her deep dives. You listen to her Find Fire Island, the docu-series, and you listen to her on this motherfucking podcast. Jess, thank you for coming on. It's a gosh darn honor.
Okay, a couple things. I just want to say that I listen to you on a fellow gay-ass podcast, okay? And
yes.
I did mention this to you, like, separately in a private DM, but I'm going to let the world know it now. I'm not going to name the podcast, but it was run by two professionals. We'll just say that. Two professional gays. And the way in which you fucking took the reins and ran that show, it was...
Be honest. Was it a monstrous taking of the reins?
No, it was necessary. Because I've listened to other episodes of that show, and I have wanted to jump into the podcast app and take the reins myself.
And you said this Jew pretended he was Santa Claus, pulled back on the reindeer, and flew to Santa Fe.
I mean, and that was when, I mean, I've been listening to you since the beginning, but I was like, just listening to you on that other show truly run circles and like just like fully interviewed the other people was... That is what needs to be done sometimes.
Now, let me say something, Jess. You are such a great host yourself, and I have been deeping diving and hot taking and also listened to your new full, like, tour de force of famous icons in Finding Fire Island. And for you to say that to me is so, I so very much appreciate that, and I'm just grateful that we finally got to have you on because... There's a lot to dive into, and I hope that you are okay with me hot taking your past.
What do you have on me? I'm ready.
Okay, so first question, number one, you have interviewed so many incredible queer icons. I'm talking Rosie, I'm talking Mario Cantone, I'm talking Margaret Cho, Melissa Etheridge, Bob the Drag Queen, Dave Holmes, Brian Moylan, many of these people, friends of this gay ass pod. If you had to be stuck on an island between Margaret Cho and Sandra Bernhardt, you can only choose one person to be stuck with. There's actually like electricity and like bars and shit, but it's the two of you stuck. Who do you choose?
Sandra.
Ooh.
Here's why.
Tell me.
Here's why. Now that I've interviewed Margaret several times, like over the years, like I used to be a writer, like I first interviewed her like well over 10 years ago. She's actually like she's a little bit of like a recluse. With Sandy is my people. Like she will sit there and talk shit with me. I know that she watches the same TV. She'll sit there and talk about how horrible And Just Like That is written with me. Margaret, she'll be like, yeah, I don't have a TV. No, I mean, I'm making that up, but I imagine she would say.
And if you're stuck on an island, honey, the shit has to be dragged out. You've got to talk about Miranda's arc.
Oh my God, we're going to get there. I have to say, I hope we can make this part. In part of my preparation for this was I just crammed episode one of Welcome to Crappy Lake.
Me too.
Oh, good, good, good. Because I feel like in the 22 minutes of that episode, And Just Like That can take a lot of tips.
Sure.
From the first episode of Crappy Lake on things that they can, there are quite a few notes. I could write an essay on the things they could take.
Oh, 100%. And help me bridge the gap between my opinion of Luann being not a good person, but such good TV. Why is it that I'm watching her year after year, show after show, and then you know what it is? I think maybe she just understands the form, and she said, "Without the cameras, I'm not going to grab this disgusting 40-pound catfish by the lower gum. But if there's a crew here and there's a boom mic, chomp chomp, my hand's going down the gullet."
They got a fat check, and by the way, Crappy Lake was supposed to be on Peacock, and they were like, this is being promoted to Bravo. That was like a last minute switcheroo.
Do you think it's because the footage was so good or because they had nothing?
Had nothing on Bravo?
Yeah, like they didn't have enough programming or like the things weren't good enough.
Okay. My theory is they wanted more people to see it. And also, I think they know they've got a flop with Roni, with the new Roni, which you and I also have an iconic connection with. We're part of the ecosystem of casting Jenna Lyons,
By the way, I have not publicly, so Carolyn Bergier,
one of my best friends, yes,
and I've seen your gorgeous vacation photos with Carolyn, by the by.
A lot of people think that we're in a throuple, like me and
it did not
her
not
her
pass
wife.
Through my mind. It did not pass through my mind of thinking about you all three.
I've been asked that question, and the answer is unfortunately no. No, I'm kidding.
I kind of think fortunately because it shows that you have good boundaries, and I think that could have been messy if you're in Cartagena with a married couple.
I've seen enough dyke drama in my life. I'm retired from the I'm looking for like a nice person that's not going to destroy my life. But anyway, please continue.
Let's manifest. But I don't know why I haven't. It's almost like I'm afraid to claim any part of the story, even though I probably should. Let's get into it. Jenna Lyons is one of the new cast members on The Real Housewives of New York new season.
Face of it.
The face, really. And tell the girls who Jenna Lyons is. In the world.
Jenna Lyons in the world is a very successful businesswoman. She ran J. Crew for 20 years and she became and basically amassed like a fortune doing that. And she was outed by the New York Post. She was in a meeting. Basically, she was going through a divorce with her husband, got into a relationship with a woman, and they were not out about it. And then she was in a meeting at J. Crew and got a phone call from the New York Post saying, if you don't come out with this, like we have photos and we're printing this. And so I'm sure she'll tell a version of that on Roni, like a shortened version of it, but that's what happened. So that's who she is in the world.
Did she end up coming out herself, or did the publication run the news?
I believe they ran it first. I think.
Well, we're going to say it's fact because we can say whatever the fuck we want on this gay-ass podcast. So what ended up happening is when Carolyn and Melody came on That's a Gay-Ass Podcast, I know that they had interviewed her.
Yes.
And I don't remember whose idea was it for...
For
did
what?
They pitch for
okay,
her
no,
to
so
be
this,
a real housewife?
This is what happened.
Okay.
I'm in the audience, right?
Right.
And I had recently got... Carolyn had never seen a stitch of Bravo before.
Right.
And so I had given her an assignment like months back, start at season 7 of Roni and like make your way forward. Like that's the jumping off point. And she became obsessed. So now she's all about Bethany and Carol, whatever. And we also have a whole conspiracy theory that Carol's gay. But that's neither here nor there. That's a
sidebar. And it's also, I will like to add my agreement to that. Continue.
Sidebar. So they booked Jenna Lyons for a live episode of Dyking Out. I'm in the audience. And that week, I had interviewed Luann for, I don't know what she was promoting, but I interviewed her. And in that interview, I said what the show really needs is a lesbian housewife or a trans housewife. And I said, this is before they split the shows in two. Like this was before all of that happened. And she was like, I'm down for it. So I basically had her on the record, and like articles were written that like lesbian, the articles were written, Luann wants a lesbian housewife. So cut to a few days later, I'm sitting in the audience and Carolyn knows all of this is going on. So she, I believe we haven't really pulled the thread this long, but I think she was like, would you ever do housewives? It's because it was all like percolating. And she was like, yeah, like I would do. She's like, I want to do a reality version of the L Word. And then I think Carolyn was smart enough to be like, how about the Real Housewives? And she was like, yes.
And that's how you know the good podcasters are asking the good questions, because it was in the lesb zeitgeist.
It was in the zeitgeist. And then what happened after that? Then they went on your show.
And we talked about her potentially being a housewife. And then I think I put out a clip of it, or maybe even just a picture of editing all the faces of the Roni women, but adding Miss Jenna Lyons to it. And then did Jenna send that to Andy Cohen?
Unclear. She either sent that to Andy Cohen, or I then had the two of them on to talk about the Roni split, in which we tell the story, everything that we've now the listeners are caught up. We retell all of this, and I clipped out that entire like 8-minute conversation of us, like basically pitching Jenna Lyons. I throw that on YouTube with like the Roni, the logo, the cast, Jenna Lyons, and that video circulated a lot. So I think it was like a three-pronged approach. It was like them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We all had a hand in the pot. But of course, Andy will say it was his idea.
And let him. I mean, listen, if Andy says he threw the first brick of Jenna Lyons' face, then we're the ones who put the clay in the mold.
But can you just imagine our reaction when she walks out at BravoCon? Do you even know the text message? Like, it was like an emergency. It was an emergency of epic
proportions.
Well,
especially, it's layered because we've never had a fully blown les on the Real Housewives of New York, or really, I think, any housewife. I know we've had our bi girls. I know we've had...
As a professional lesbian, I'm saying there's never been a real one.
Okay,
until
Jenna Lyons. I'll take it from you. So then Jenna Lyons, like, it's the fact that we have discussed, percolated, and then to have her, and is the show gonna be good or bad? Honestly, it's already a win that we know she's on it. And will I be watching every week? At least for the first few weeks, but I hope. But Crappy Lake, I will be watching every single week. Yeah. I mean, I will be doing that.
So that's that. I mean, I know they filmed a scene at Henrietta Hudson.
Sure, of course. I also want to just give a shout out to Carolyn. She DM'd me on Instagram with a screen grab of the New York Times article where she had been interviewed about Jenna, and she had said that another gay podcaster had put this graphic together, and that was me. And she was like, I told them your name, but they didn't add it. So I want to give her the shout out for saying, thank you for telling them my name. New York Times, you're canceled for not including me. But also, I have this weird relationship to, I think because I live in LA now, I want to not be a clout chasing, name dropping coon to Suvi Lukes. And I think I'm maybe going a little too far in that direction, because I think I should just like let the world know that Jenna Lyons, I'm a part of the history.
Eric, I feel like we're related. Like, are you my long lost brother?
Sister. I am.
Okay, why continue?
I actually think because we are related, I need to ask you the famous podcast question, which is Jess Rothschild. Let's get into this fucking shoot. Whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do we blame, babe?
It's gotta be Madonna.
Rest in the hospital bed, Madonna. We hope
she was just seen walking on the streets of the Upper East Side, breaking news.
I did see that, and I did hear that she's going to try to do the tour in the fall, starting in Europe. But Jess, what a great answer. And by the way, we have not talked about Madonna enough on this gay ass podcast. So paint the picture. Is there a specific song, vid? Is it sexual? Is it pop cultural musical? What are we talking?
I was born in 82. Okay. Mm-hmm. So like I'm 40. So I was a huge Michael Jackson, Janet Jackson fan. Like 89 was my era. I was living it. Okay. Mm. That is when Like a Prayer came out. The next year is when the Immaculate Collection came out. To coincide with the Immaculate Collection, they put out a DVD of all of her videos. Maybe it was a VHS tape. Who knows? Either way, I bought it on like any medium. And I think there was such a covert element of gayness to every single video of hers that even though I didn't have the language to be like, I'm gay. And of course, a lot of it was gay men. I think it all just, I just related to all of it. I was like, oh, this is my shit.
Well, that's what I love about everything that you work on, and your energy and your essence is that you are so, I think, in touch with your queerness that it transcends stereotype of just like lesbians do this, gay men do this. It's like, no, honey, you paint the rainbow. And yeah. I think Madonna is a part of that rainbow. I think Bravo is a part of that rainbow. Yeah. For me, a color of my rainbow was Janet Jackson when I was very young watching the videos. There was something about her sexiness, and like I don't know if it was like the way that her push-up bra showed me the perfect perky tits, but like I know that I wasn't going to fuck her, but there was something about the energy emanating that might have been something with the Madonna for you.
It's funny, my friend who's in Finding Fire Island, his name is Ben Rimmelauer, and he was Luann's cabaret director.
Listen,
all roads lead to Roni. So he's one of my closest friends, and he's deep in my text messages. Every minute I'm getting Madonna status updates. You know, he's deep in it. And apropos of nothing, he goes, when did you find Madonna at her sexiest? Like, what era? And I'm like, oh, that's such an interesting question. Because I was never like it was never like a sexual thing with her. But I was like, oh, well, now that I have an opportunity to think about it, I think it was post Sean Penn divorce. That was the moment. It was when she was hanging around with Madonna and Ingrid Caceres and Jennifer Grey and Debbie Mazar. Maybe that is when I turned gay. Maybe that's actually, if we really drill down and get the hardcore data on me, that's what the computer would show.
It's the power women post. It's her post Sean Penn divorce, which unfortunately, I'm not proud to say this, but in that era, I really did thinking about the way my tongue would approach Sean Penn's balls.
Okay.
He's not a good guy now, but back in the day, there was something about the jaw. There's pictures of them together. It's the same thing with Angelina Jolie and Billy Bob Thornton. Bad, bad guy. Bad, bad guy. Yeah. And yet, you think about it. And then you think about it.
Yeah. So, yeah. That's your turn.
That is such a gorgeous answer. And I have to say, there's something about the Madonna fandom that is unlike any other. I have two friends here in LA who would truly die for her. And one of those friends was supposed to go to Vancouver for his birthday to see her concert. And then, of course, her health stuff now has been a huge, huge deal. And it does seem like she's going to be okay, right?
I think so. I trust Rosie and Debbie Mazar with their Instagram posts saying that she's okay.
Do you have a feeling about, I know that Madonna obviously in the early part of her life was huge. What do you feel about her current way of expressing, her current look? What is that? How does that resonate with you?
It's so challenging. For me as a Madonna fan, like people, like friends of mine, like real life friends of mine be like sending me like all the weird shit she does.
Yeah.
I don't relate with that in any way. It's like the Madonna that I knew like is kind of gone. I loved Madame X. I loved the Madame X theater tour. I saw it 3 times. It was phenomenal. Mm. How do I reconcile her putting shit in her ass? Like, how do I deal with that?
How do any of us reconcile with anyone doing that?
And also, but like, changing her face. It's like, we know what you look like. And, like, why did she have to, like, get those, like, huge tits? Like, she had this woman had the best body in the world. She had a dancer's body. There's no better body than a dancer's body. Athletic, muscles, all of it. And to, like, fill it with fat intentionally in the ass, I don't understand.
Well, it's the thing that makes me sad, and I think it speaks to a bigger question, is how do you relate the new things that our icons are doing to try to stay relevant when they don't actually jive with their essence? And I think that what you said really hits me hard, because I think about sometimes when something happens with Britney Spears that is cuckoo, and I'm like, oh, okay, well, that feels very different from the Britney I grew up with. When Whoopi Goldberg says something about the Holocaust, honey, I disassociate faster than you can say back in the habit. And so it's the very same question of when our people, our icons, our saviors, our mothers do something that really doesn't even feel right or okay. Or
I mean, like, could you imagine if Roseanne was your number one?
Oh God, can we all pour one out for the Roseanne stands?
It's like, I think about that. It's like, well, now like you have to be completely out. But like with Madonna, this is a different, listen, I still love her music. There's only one album that I didn't enjoy in her entire catalog. MDNA is the only thing that I did not like.
Which when you think about her discography, that's a pretty great record.
Like,
is there anyone for you right now that you've had to abandon the fandom because of their current actions? I don't know if there is one for me. I mean, because like, unfortunately, Whoopi could do a lot. I would probably stay on board.
I think Madonna is the closest. Okay, if we're taking Madonna out of the equation, in the sense that like, I don't study her Instagram. Like, don't.
On purpose.
Yeah. Is there anybody? I was Bethany's number one.
Actually, same. This is a good one.
I was Bethany's number one fan on the face of the planet. And when she's losing me, she's down bad.
Okay, tell me the moment that she lost you. Was it the new HBO series?
I fucking loved. That was iconic. And the fact that they ripped that off of HBO Max, I would watch that tonight.
I'm going to drag you and say that the Titanic was shipping and you were playing the orchestra on Bethany's boat. Let me just say that much. So then was it the TikTok presence?
It was the podcast endeavor.
Sure.
Can we talk about this? She put out an episode of her podcast last week. The title is, it's 4 minutes long. Episode title is Happy July 4th. There are 4 ads in it. It's 2.5 minutes of ads.
We don't fuck with the 4 minute app with the 4 ads. No, that's just that is criminal, especially like, that's just criminal for any media, but especially for a podcast to try to money grab me.
I think I find it embarrassing when these celebrities have podcasts for whatever reason. It's like, I don't know. I find it a bit embarrassing.
Well, you can only imagine what the conservative girlies are saying about Meghan Markle stopping her podcast with all that money from Spotify and then only having X amount of episodes. I heard some stuff. I read some stuff. So when I am a, you know, household name billionaire, and if I come out with a new podcast, honey, if it's a 4 minute episode, it's going to be 4 minutes of me moaning and giving really good content and maybe one commercial. But speaking of good content, I need to congratulate you on two things. One is just the fact that Finding Fire Island, your docuseries, came out. I've not only listened to the first ep, I've loved it, but I've also realized that a week ago, almost to the day, you had your 15-year anniversary of your first Fire Island experience, July 4th of 2008. And I want to say mazel tov. And how do you feel? 15 years.
I did realize it because I was talking to my mom and she was like, when did you first go? And I was like, actually, and then like I counted the year. And yeah, that is crazy. By the way, the only reason I even know that date, well, I always knew the invasion, aka the big July 4th annual event. I always knew that was my first time, but the year I dug back on Facebook. My photos. Wow. That was how I wouldn't have been, you know, I wouldn't have known.
One of the only good things about Facebook is like the doc. Like I was trying to show a friend a picture the other day and it was just like my ex, my ex, my ex, my ex. And I was like, okay, it's a funny time capsule into memorable moments, both good and bad. And one of the things I love about not only have you just the people on the series, like, of course, Brian Mulliman, I love you have him. You talk to Matt Rogers, Joel Kim Booster. I mean, Margaret Cho, there's something so beautiful about you talk to, remind me of the drag queen's name who's 90.
Okay. So yeah. So his name is Bob Levine, but Rose is his, he goes by Rose Levine.
That's, I mean, come on. The fact that you think that me, a gay ass Jew, is not going to love Rose Levine, the 90-year-old drag queen from Fire Island.
Girl, he did a show the weekend of July 4th. I saw, he's still performing. I just saw him perform a week and a half ago, singing. And his voice is like strong. I'm gonna send you videos of him.
Full, oh please,
drag singing, live singing. Well,
it just really hits me when I think about someone of that age who has been doing this for so long, and also like being gay and queer in the 50s and 60s. I want to tell you something. I got a DM from a listener yesterday that I'm gonna read to you because it really it hit me hard. And I haven't done this much on the podcast, but. This is someone messaged me a sweet message that they like the podcast. And I was like, oh, that really means a lot. Thank you. And then they sent me this. They said, one of the reasons I listen is to hear how young gay people are navigating life these days. I'm 63 years old, have been with my husband for 30 years, married 6 years, and monogamous the whole damn time. We're still very much in love and still enjoy each other sexually. We laugh each day and love our lives. We love to hear you and your guests' youthful takes on all things gay, and we're so thankful for your generation's energy and put a lot of hope in you. Although times have changed our culture, it's clear that the one thread that ties us all together is gay trauma. It seemed to be getting so much better until the crazies started taking over, but keep up the good work.
That's
Are you kidding?
That's unbelievable.
I mean, it just hit me so hard because I, as you know, have really reckoned with a lot of the traumas and shitty things that I was told and we were told. And then this podcast has really been like pointing them out to me and helped me in healing. But I think about those people who, you know, are in their 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s now. And it's just like, I know we all have the trauma that we can discuss, but it's so different when you were literally fired from your job when it was found out.
Yes. We talk about that a lot. In the Fire Island podcast,
yeah.
Like the raids, like a guy talks about like living through raids. Actually, it's in the episode that's coming out this week. This week is centered on the Pines, and guy talks about living through raids. And yeah, they would, I really want to dive deep. I need to know if you were in New York forever. Did you go to Fire Island? I want to totally do this with you.
I'm glad you asked because a lot of your podcasts resonate so hard with me. I went one time. And I went with my now husband, who at the time we were just dating, and he had gone with his ex-boyfriend. So there was already a bit of a layer of like, I'm going into their territory. And the long story short is that I felt very overwhelmed. And a lot about what you talk about on the show is so true with me, which is like there's this sort of divide between feeling safe because you're allowed to be queer in yourself. And on the other side, feeling like, am I hot enough? Am I rich enough? Am I boo, 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 boo? And I was very young. I mean, I was like 24, maybe 25. And I know that if I were to go now, and I plan to go in the next chapter of my life, it would feel different because I'm so much more at peace with myself. But at that time, I was really overwhelmed. And
Where were you? In the Pines?
I was in the Pines, and I went for like a little like 24 hours, like a very short trip.
You stayed overnight?
I did not stay over. I went early. So I actually less than 24 hours. I went like early in the morning, and then I did not stay over.
So you took the, you did the whole train to the shuttle to the ferry.
Oh yeah.
Okay, so that's the thing. Like I, of course, started out doing day trips. Like everyone starts out, I'm sure, doing day trips, and then eventually you graduate in, like, you have people, and of course you're making more money. You can afford to stay there overnight. Eventually, you know, hopefully in your 30s. But I think a day trip like misses the point.
I think I would have to agree.
It's the longest day of your life.
It is. You're not an optimal place to be like, I'm going to let loose and let my freak flag fly. You're like, no, I have 4 more hours until I have to go back on that treacherous journey back to my devastating apartment.
So much of the magic is the night, like seeing the night activity, like how it looks at night, seeing the moon over the ocean. And that's when all the shows are there. You know, some of these things don't start till like 10, 11 o'clock. And then on the flip side, waking up to the sound of the ocean, taking a walk, getting coffee, sitting by the canteen, doing the thing, seeing the boats in the harbor. That's
I
want to
be
vibe.
So honest with you, because that is sounds so beautiful. And obviously, I'm obsessed with the movie Fire Island. I love the sunset scene. What do they say? Like,
you did it, girl. You set.
Ugh, it's just, and I'm going to be so honest with you. I was just in New York a couple weeks ago, and I was like, I want to do one night out, one gay night out. So I was like, where do people go? I went to a couple gay bars, and I realized that I have zero regrets about the time I spent in New York. But the only thing that I wonder about why this happened in the path of my life is, why did I not have the queer awakening that I could have had there? And let me be fully transparent. I had definitely a queer awakening. I went to NYU. I like fucking came out right before and like fucked and sucked and dated and all that. But I don't think I went full tilt in a way that I know I will be doing it for the rest of my life when I go back to New York and make that happen.
What do you mean? Like, are you talking about?
I'm talking about like a group of queers that we go out and we talk
community.
About the community, and yeah. I think, and then the house in Fire Island, and I've never been to P-Town.
And
I hear about these things, and even on Finding Fire Island, and I have friends in LA who are planning trips. And I'm just like, there was something about my journey that didn't come into play yet.
Gay summer life is what I live for. Like, even though, like, obviously I love Fire Island, I dedicated the last like 9 months of my life making this series about it. But the honest truth is, in some ways, in a lot of ways, Provincetown's even better.
I've heard that, and I'm dying.
Which, like, you know, don't let the news out, you know, too much. Like, the person, but I mean, I could see even doing an episode of Hot Takes, doing a deep dive, doing like a bottle episode, which, like, I've done in the past. Like, I've done the Rise and Fall of Gawker. I've done a whole thing on the Cult of Soul Cycle. I love doing that shit. I would do one on Provincetown.
Yeah.
Because it's so different. Like, it offers, it's a totally...
What would you say is the biggest difference between P-Town and Fire Island?
P-Town is an actual town. Mm-hmm. Like, you need a CVS, we got you.
Thank God.
There's restaurants. There's, like, you could be in P-Town for 2 weeks, never eat at the same restaurant twice, and never see the same show twice.
I'm obsessed. And you can also use a $3 off coupon at CVS and feel every rush of life.
Yes.
Continue.
And you can, like, go on bike rides. Like, you can, like, rent a bike, go all around. Fire Island is so much. Fire Island is tiny. There's boardwalks. There's no cars. On, like, Provincetown, like, you will have to, like, deal with the occasional, like, car getting in your fucking way, or, like, a biker, like, getting in your way. So that's so peaceful that, like, you're walking everywhere. It's just boardwalk. And it's house culture. That's the difference. P-Town, there, people do rent houses, and people do certainly cook in the houses. But Provincetown is known for its, like, incredible seafood. Like, you eat out. Like, Ben Rimmelauer says in, I think, the first episode, when I go to Provincetown, he goes, it's a vacation. I want to eat every meal out. I want to see Dina Martina at least once a week. Like,
the Fire Island, it's like, what are we going to cook?
Yeah.
It's a lot of trying to figure out logistics. But then, of course, there's the magic on top of it. But I think that you need to be equipped to figure out how to build the trip that you're looking for, whereas P-Town is kind of like you have 50 million things to choose from is what it sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah. Fire Island is very much house culture, particularly in the Pines. Like that's what all those boys are doing. Like they're cooking at home and like you have a pool and like that's the whole vibe. In Cherry Grove, which by the way, you can just walk to, like in Fire Island, everybody who's listening to this, I'm sure knows it's the Pines and Cherry Grove. Cherry Grove, there actually are restaurants. There are like three. Maybe like three or four. Car, I mean, three that I would eat at. There's like two that I wouldn't step foot in. And there are show. I mean, there's shows in both. Like you can certainly see drag shows like every night. And and like Betty Who just performed. Like I'm seeing Patti LuPone in August at the Ice Palace in Cherry Grove. So like Cherry Grove is more commercial. There's, you know, you can get pizza, that type of vibe.
And I do, I'm realizing now what is so exciting about our time on this earth is that we are having these experiences where, you know, in about 30 years from now, when you're talking to the youngins and you say you saw Patti LuPone perform during a gay summer of 2023, like that's going to be like
in
the Bette Midler of the
bathhouses. In a room that holds 300 people and... It's funny. I'm friendly with, well, actually, the guy who now owns the Ice Palace, he's in the series. And so he talks a lot about like booking the talent. And like, there's a big episode where he talks about getting Liza Minnelli to perform there. And so when we recorded, after we recorded, is when he said, by the way, like, I got Patti, here's the date, whatever, to make sure I could go. And he goes, yeah, I'm dealing with her rider right now. And in her rider was that it has to be 68 degrees. Girl. The Ice Palace, this is where they have the underwear party. Like the underwear party you saw in the movie Fire Island. Dude, that room is like 80 degrees on a good day. I think he's putting in air conditioning. I don't know what he's doing.
Listen, for Patti, we move mountains.
He's moving a mountain.
68 degrees. Okay. When you have the ability to be demanding like Patti, what's in your rider? What do you want backstage? Is it like a peanut butter M&M?
I think also I want it to be 68 degrees, actually.
I mean,
temperature is very important to me. Not many people know that. what's in my rider? I think, you know, okay, you know what? Like maybe some goldfish crackers.
Hell yeah. Which I'm so glad we're bringing up snacks because one of the bigger headlines of the week is that Costco apparently brought back something, which is the animal cracker covered in Reese's chocolate.
Oh, that's delicious.
So I just want to make sure everyone knows to head to your Costco, hashtag not sponsored yet.
Wait, so you've never been to Provincetown either?
Jess, I know. Can you believe?
You have to do this. And what's great, what also the other thing I want to say about Provincetown in a way that differs from Fire Island, P-Town, the whole summer is broken up into themed weeks. So like there's Bear Week, which I feel like you'd really enjoy. There's Bear Week. There's like Baby Dyke Week.
Wait, tell me why I'd enjoy Bear Week. Is because I have body hair, because you can see me putting my
I thought you like body hair.
Oh, I do.
So therefore you'd go for Bear Week. It's the world is your oyster.
You said 1 + 1 = 2, bitch. And I said, you're right.
There's a week called, there's Carnival, which is like their version of like Halloween. Well, actually, I take that. It's their version of like Mardi Gras. It's like every, but then they also have Spooky Bear, which is their actual Halloween. I'm going this October. I'm going to Spooky Bear.
By the way, your Halloween expeditions included a party through New Orleans with Danny Roberts from The Real...
You stalked the shit out of me.
Of course I did.
Yes.
You're a Halloween chick. And by the way, these theme weeks sound amazing. Can you explain why most of the gay men's crush, which is Danny Roberts in The Real World New Orleans, who of course had the military boyfriend who could not ask or could not tell.
Paul.
What's the deal? I know you had him on your pod, which was a great app, but
like,
is that
how
do
we wind up in New Orleans together at Halloween?
Yeah.
Okay. So I had interviewed him for the first time during COVID, like before they did the homecoming thing. And we had retained like a really nice relationship. He wound up, the other person who made me gay. Do you know who Genesis from The Real World Boston is?
99% sure. Genesis.
She's got blonde hair. She was like the feminine lesbian on Real World Boston. She was in like in AOL chat rooms talking to trans people.
500% I remember her. Real World Boston was
underrated.
Underrated and also like really formative for a lot of people.
So I had told Danny like offline when we were just chatting, I was like, you know, the one that I really want is Genesis. And I had made contact with her because at that time I was interviewing a bunch of Real Worlders. And he's like, oh, I'll get her to do it. I'm like, I don't know. Like, she told me that she like basically would love to, but doesn't like the sound of her voice. And she doesn't even do like friends of hers who are in the industry. She doesn't even do their podcasts. So cut to like a year and a half later, out of nowhere, I get a DM from Genesis. I'm ready. Let's do it. And that was Danny like made that happen.
What was your reaction when you got the DM?
I mean, I like stopped cold in my tracks.
Mm.
Truly.
I wish that feeling for everyone to have a DM from a Real World cast member crush. Go on.
I mean, this is like my number one for like life. So then what happened was I actually went with, like, coincidentally, I was going to New Orleans for 2 months for like the winter, like January and February, just like working remotely there. Like, I needed a break from New York. I was like going mm-hmm. through shit and needed an escape. I went there. And then when I came back, that was when Homecoming was on. And so I interviewed him again. And also in preparing for my like stint in New Orleans, I was like, where should I stay? Like, we were very much like talking New Orleans. Mm-hmm. So when I interviewed him that second time, he was like, you know, my dream is to throw a Halloween party in New Orleans. And I was like, Danny, I can make that happen with one hand tied behind my back. I'm now a New Orleans expert. I just lived there for 2 months. And he's like, well, we should talk. And like, we made it happen.
But I think what you prove that it's so inspiring to me is that the connections that can be made in any sort of realm, but especially among queer people, all it takes is the effort to put yourself out there and then to be vulnerable and continue the connecting. It's like, it's one of my biggest fears when I started this podcast was like, well, I feel like all the work is worth it. And I found out pretty quickly that what makes it worth it are the people I get to connect with. And like, and that story, I mean, the genesis of it all, the Danny Roberts of it all, the fact that you find yourself partying in New Orleans with him,
That I had lived there, like suddenly I was the New Orleans expert. Like suddenly I was like, Danny, I know exactly where we should do it. Like, because I was like, I know the perfect place. And so because I had spent so much, it's like this like queer, every night they have like three like queer shows. It's all like queer comedy, drag, you name it, like sex shit. Like they do tons of stuff. And it's like the New Orleans section of maybe like Bushwick, I guess we'd say.
Sure, sure, sure.
And that theater, literally, I'm like, this is one email away from like, guess how much it cost to rent out this entire venue with a bar? They had two bars to rent this venue Halloween weekend.
I'm nervous. Was it like, it's either really high or really low.
Well, how much would that have cost in New York City? A party for 150 people, private. You can, you know, we'll hook you up with a DJ.
Many, many, many thousands.
$300.
New Nolens.
And get this, they're like, I'm like, okay, can I like vent? I'm like emailing. I'm like, no problem. And I'm like, should I just like Venmo it to you? They're like, no, 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 we only take cash. So I'm Venmoing my friend who lives there. I'm like, I need you to just like take this $300 down, like put it in an envelope with my name on it. Like that's how it like works down there.
I'm obsessed with that. did any sparks fly between you and Genesis?
She's married.
Fuck.
Yeah.
We're going to find your Genesis. We're going to find your Genesis. Before I ask you the next podcast question so I can make my files complete for my matchmaking service for you, do you prefer a certain look? And if you're talking at a party and you're meeting someone, who's talking more, you or Genesis or the Genesis in your life?
Wow, that's so interesting. Who's talking more? Probably I would be talking more.
Okay. So we're going to find your coffee meets beta, as I call them.
Probably Probably I, although I am very charmed, like I find that I am, or people like can match. No, they got, I can't have somebody as intense as me. It's got to be like a notch below. Otherwise, I'm going to have a heart attack.
Same.
You're asking like my type, like who's my.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, I love red hair. I love dark, like dark hair, dark eyes. If we're doing red hair, I like green eyes, dark hair with green eyes.
You can pitch a hot woman.
Which is so funny because Genesis is blonde. So like, listen, we're all able to step outside of our stereotypes.
Can I just say how beautiful it is that you're allowing yourself to step out of your stereotypes to like a blonde hair, blue eyed woman?
So strong.
Can I tell you something? When I was in New Orleans, I'm on the apps, right? And I'm on Tinder, which I had was never, I was in a very long relationship. Like I was legit married. Like,
I remember hearing that right before COVID. Yeah.
I mentioned it in the kickoff to the.
Like a decade long relation.
That's part of the reason I went to New Orleans was because I couldn't escape the. It was like I had, it was never ending. So cut to me in New Orleans. And I was never on Tinder, even in my, of course, I've always been on dating apps, like when I was younger, but, or dating, they weren't even apps then. They were like, OkCupid.com,
whatever. That's what I did, yeah.
And so I'm on Tinder, because like, listen, I'm just here for fun. I'm not here for a long time. I'm here for a good time. I wind up meeting this chick, Kate, who she was married to a man. But she dates women on the side. He doesn't.
He's so like, she's still with the man, but she's allowed to.
They have a kid.
Surf and turf.
Yes. Wow. And so she like became like my girlfriend. Like, I mean,
you had a New Orleans. You had a New Orleans love like affair.
And she has red hair and green eyes.
Listen, that's there's nothing better
I'm
than
landing
a vacation
the plane.
Romance.
That was the landing of the plane.
You landed it, honey. Oh my God, what a gorgeous story. And by the way, I love that that happened for you and for her. And can you just imagine the thoughts that she was having about this magical being from New York who rocked her fucking world?
There are photos of us on Instagram.
We shall be diving. But speaking of diving, I'm going to deep dive into the next podcast question, which is Jess Rothschild. If the world was ending, you could only save one character actress. Who would you save?
I really thought a lot about this. And I think the correct answer for me is Clea DuVall.
No one has said Clea DuVall that yet. Jess, gorgeous answer.
Tell me
why.
Oh my God.
Oh wait, I mean, I think I know why, but tell me why.
Why not?
What's the Clea DuVall? Is it because of her queer
She's my type. I love Okay, here's why. First of all, she's always been out. She's always, you know, but I'm a cheerleader. She's got that edge. I need an edge. That's like my driving thing that creates like sexual chemistry for me.
Yeah.
Is like I need somebody that's like got some edge, some toughness around them. And I mean, listen.
Unapologetic.
Her only flaw, truly her only flaw, is that she wrote that horrific movie, Happiest Ending, with fucking Kristen Stewart, which is one of the worst movies ever made.
We can forgive, don't forget.
None of us are perfect.
None of us are perfect. And by the way, this is the recent, like, unfortunately, deep creative thought I've had recently. But like I'm realizing one of the biggest success factors for people we love is that they create without fear of it being the worst thing they ever make. And they keep making. And Clea DuVall made her worst thing. And then soldiered on. And that we have to give her snaps for.
But she did have the foresight to cast Jinx Monsoon before Jinx's renaissance.
And then we can now thank Clea DuVall for seeing into the future.
Yes.
The future is...
She knew.
The future is a narcoleptic, witchy Jew from Portland.
Oh my God. I'm in love with Jinx Monsoon.
Oh, same.
Jinx is my type. I think I mean, this is more for me and my therapist, or maybe us offline. I think I could date a trans woman.
I love that thought that's coming through, because
I think I'm not on any apps right now, but I recently told Karen, like, recently all of my crushes have been trans women that I know in real life, that I'm like meeting in real life. Of course, they're all fucking married or whatever, but you know.
What I love about what you're saying is something that I thought about too, which is that our minds, I think, expand the more that we live on this earth and are exposed to things. Because, by the by, let's just talk about how the people getting arrested for being gay in the 50s mm-hmm. are today's world of them fucking blocking gender-affirming care for people around the country. And so it's like that same criminalization of queer people. And so, of course, on the one side, it's fully fucked. But on the other side, we are also fighting for our trans family members and learning about who they are, how and how we can support, and also how fucking hot they are. And so I think
Did you watch the Peacock version of Queer as Folk?
I didn't. Oh, I did not, which is cancelable because I have interviewed people on that show, but I've not watched
it. Oh, you should watch it. Okay. So it's I love the original Queer as Folk, like the Showtime one, which is not even the original one. You know what I mean? The US one.
Yeah.
Watch. This is hard recommendation for your listeners and you. Watch the Peacock Queer as Folk, which was also canceled. It stars a trans woman and her non-binary partner. And then there's like hot gay guys around.
Right.
The lead woman is this actress, Jesse James Keitel, who I'm fucking obsessed with.
Mm. Great plug. And any listeners, please, that want to cancel me for having not watched it, I'm gonna do it soon. Well, unfortunately, because we have to get towards the end of this ep, I'm going to make sure that I have asked about I want you to give a piece of advice before the final podcast question, which is because I really respect you for having gone through this really long relationship, getting out of it, and then sort of climbing out of the difficulty into really like living this life of creating amazing shows, traveling, having your love affairs. Is there any piece of advice that you would give to someone coming out of a very tough breakup or a tough period as to what they can look out for the glimmer of hope that tomorrow is going to be better?
I would say go to places like Fire Island, go to places like Provincetown, even because that summer, I had a life-changing breakup in February of 2020. Mm-mm. It was that summer that I really got entrenched in the community. And I was alone. A friend invited me out, but then I kept going out. And I wasn't going with – Fire Island is an easy place to just like throw on a backpack and like go. And the people who I met, some of the people I met there – it turns out we live blocks away from each other in the city, and like we now hang out like once a month. It's a year round, like, and we redo our reunion. Like, it turned out we were all staying in the same share house by accident. We met, we all booked it on Airbnb. It is a place, and Provincetown is also a place where you can meet people in the most surprising ways. And that is the thing that has worked for me.
And it sounds like it's going out of your comfort zone. I think a dear friend of mine went to a town in Northern California called Guerneville that apparently is a similar vibe of the P-Towns and the Fire Island, just a little smaller, but a queer oasis. And he said that he went out on a limb and went to a party by himself and had one of the most like affirming weekends of his life, because it was so unapologetically queer, but also like so many different types. And I think that really embrace people. And I love, that's such good advice. And even I, who am not going through a terrible breakup, but I'm going through like a post-pride lowness. And I think that I'm absolutely going to be taking that advice and finding a place like that to go to. The way that I need to end this episode, as devastated as I am, is to ask you the final question I did not prep you on, which is, Jess, what is the best Whoopi Goldberg film?
Okay. The correct answer is Ghost. However, I'm going to give a strong, strong plug for Sister Act, because Sister Act 1 and 2 were both written by Paul Rudnick, who fucking stars in Finding Fire Island and is going to light up your ears. This man speaks with the words that come out of his mouth are like poetry. He owned
He
owned the iconic Pyramid House in the Pines with his husband for 16 years. He tells
what a fucking full circle moment.
He's in almost every episode, starting with episode 3, which comes out this week. And he is he's a figure of like a Brian Moylan or a Ben Rimmelauer. He's a raconteur. And he wrote The First Wives Club, Sister Act, Jeffrey, In and Out.
Never have I ever heard a better answer, plug, and full circ. Everyone, listen to Finding Fire Island.
Do you like that I somehow wrapped Whoopi Goldberg into a plug for my own shit?
Are you kidding me? That's what we call an artist, huh? That's what we call a wordsmith, and that's what we call a genius. Listen to Finding Fire Island. Let's do hot takes and deep dives. But more importantly, Jess is going to tell us, where can we find ya and follow ya?
You can stalk the shit out of me at JessXNYC. Instagram, whatever we're doing over on Threads, Twitter, all that. But Instagram is like, if you want to listen, if you're cute, you know my type at this point, please slide into my DMs.
Slip in, please. Honey. Jess, you're a star. Thank you so much for coming on. And I can't wait to see you IRL, maybe in P-Town or Fire Island or beyond.
I would love it.
God, do I love you for listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast. You've made my dreams come true, and you continue to do so. If you have not yet left your 5-star review, now's the time. Click the button, do the button, and see my tushin. I will see you next week with hopefully gorgeous, scandalous stories from the gay nudie beach I attend. And support on Gay Ass Podcast Patreon for $5 a month, if that speaks to you. I love you so much.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.